You're listening to Hockey Central Saturday with Nick Alberga and Rory Boylan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And so the first Saturday of March in the NHL is in the books. Time to recap a 10-game Saturday. It's Hockey Central Saturday across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Nick Alberga joined alongside Rob Simpson, filling in for Rory Boylan this week. Find us on Twitter at the Golden Muzzy, at Simmer Puck. Many thanks to producer Hayden Mathewson, statistician Papa Minnow. What a shirt he brought into the program this week. He is ready for a Hawaiian vacation or something. We love Papa here on the program. Thanks to Andrew and Jared back at Master Control. Decent job, boys. And we get closer and closer, Simmer, to the Stanley Cup playoffs, about 5 weeks away now.
Very excited. It's actually it's hard to believe that we're that close.
Yeah. I always laugh because like Rory does the same thing. I'd be like, yeah, so pumped.
Yeah, like so.
I'm with you. Like, see, I think the snail's pace in the season will be the next like 2-3 weeks as we get closer, engage in these I guess we want to call them battles for playoff positioning. The Western Conference, if somebody please want it, but I think it's going to be a bit of a lull the next couple weeks.
Well, here's one thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when does the dog days of winter end? Like
maybe the 10-game mark left.
The only thing that's going to stink about it, mm-hmm. it's not so much like a grind. It's the fact that so many teams will be out of it. We've already determined that there's only 10 teams battling in one conference for 8 playoff spots, and there's only 9 battling in the other.
Mm-hmm.
So as they kind of drop out, it becomes garbage time for everybody that's not in it.
That's right? Why I expected a bigger deadline too, by the way.
A bigger deadline for deals
in terms of movement. Like, I felt like a lot of teams, especially in the East, didn't want to get involved because Tampa's so damn good.
Well, part of it is the two big UFAs decided that they're in Columbus and they decided to keep them. Mm-hmm. That changes everything.
Yeah,
pretty much all the other UFAs moved.
Yeah,
but when you have the two maybe biggest, like for sure biggest goalie, and one of your biggest forwards staying put in a very odd situation in that they're both playing for the same team,
mm-hmm.
and then they load up, that's weird. The fact that they didn't move, you know, that shortened the bench, so to speak.
Who is your biggest winner of the deadline now past about a week?
Gee, I'd love to say Columbus after just saying that all, but
yeah, but
it hasn't
worked
out so much.
It's hard to put it together this quickly with a new roster.
I always, I know Mark Stone goes to Vegas, and I know Nashville adds Wayne Simmonds.
And Granlund.
But I'm a big thing about centerman.
Yeah.
And that stack they now have in Winnipeg, when they get that kind of feel put together and they got plenty of time to do it, a month plus, with Scheifele and Kevin Hayes and Little, that's pretty good. And they got a healthy Ehlers. You got Liney getting his confidence back.
Yeah.
You catch him on a hot streak instead of a cold streak. Yeah, I like the way they stack out. They got to get Bufflin healthy.
Oh, and Morrissey too. I think they have to be realistic as well in Winnipeg. Like what you got last year from Paul Stastny, I don't think you can think the same with Kevin Hayes, right?
No, the other thing, the weird thing, I often wonder about the mentality of rentals. In other words, and I don't mean like in a Thomas Plekanec way, where he's playing in a Toronto sweater and it just seems weird to everybody, including himself.
Yeah.
He's like, really? Am I going to win a cup with these guys? And I'm going to go back to Montreal and then I'm going to retire? So I don't look at it that way necessarily, but still the you know, Stastny, they knew he was leaving. Hayes, does he know he's leaving? I guess it's how well you gel.
Yeah, but I think it's pretty much.
He's a rental, pure rental, no?
Yeah. They have no money to re-sign him.
Right. So I guess it's how motivated a person is, how well he meshes. There's so many factors, but that rental mentality, I don't know if you can really put a finger on that.
I think Hayes is already 1 foot into Boston, if you know what I'm saying. Hmm. I think that's the likeliest destination for Kevin Hayes in the offseason, but a lot can change.
Well, that's part of it that makes me raise that question. Is it like your wife, your kids, like she wants to know, okay, where are we really going to end up?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, okay, rah, rah, sis, boom, bah, go Jets.
Yeah.
But really not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She's like, where are we going to be? Where am I moving to? What am I doing? And it's got to weigh on your mind.
I think you start winning some games, though, you get into the act of, hey, this could be something special. You know, that's all you need, the motivation, and certainly the Central Division, something to play out in the next couple weeks with Nashville, heck, even to an extent St. Louis, Dallas at this point in time, but it might be a two-horse race between Nashville and Winnipeg. We'll get to that story later on. We must start Scotiabank Arena in Toronto. It's the Maple Leafs and the Buffalo Sabres, second time this week, and what'd they call it, T.O. Tavares Day or something like that? Like, We're really giving sympathy to a guy who makes that much money. Like, no offense.
It's not even the money.
Is it not part of being a pro athlete?
Right.
You know, leaving a place?
Yeah. I mean, boo-hoo.
But they made a day after it, and they gave him a standing ovation, number 91.
I don't mind that. I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
I like that part of it. I love the fact they support their guy, and they give him the standing O, but you don't need to declare it this or that. He's a grown man. He can handle it. Right?
It's very
well put. Cool moment, though.
It was a cool moment, and Tavares certainly came to play in this game. It, in fact, only took 420, and he was on the scoreboard.
Marinson, there's a tip out of the air. Omark stopped it. The puck is still loose. Tavares scores! Linus Omark thought he had it, then he couldn't find it. John Tavares did.
So there you have it. John Tavares, 420 into this game, is 37th for Marner and Marinson. I thought, in general, that first period mixed with some of the ugliest goals you can find, not named Mike Smith.
Yeah, goal and two assists for both JT and for Mitch Marner, who keep things cranking. Does it really mean that much in the standings for the Toronto Maple Leafs at this juncture? As they are, 3 points behind the Boston Bruins.
Rinse, repeat, lather.
Yeah.
All of the above. It was a 2-2 hockey game after 20 in the second period. Here's the eventual game winner from newcomer Nick Batan.
So Zaitsev gets it back at center. He's under pressure by Mittelstadt, but he moved the puck. Patan shovels the puck ahead. Zaitsev will dump it in. Gauthier and Moore go in after it. Ristolainen knocked the puck out of the air, then lost control. Center and pass, score! Nick Patan with his first goal as a Toronto Maple Leaf and a bang-bang play in the Leafs' lead.
Only fitting, we were just talking about the Winnipeg Jets, who felt they direly needed Per Lindholm at the deadline, one of their 17 deadline trades to put them over the top. But Nick Patan gets his wish. He asked for a deal, by the way. His first with the Maple Leafs in his first game from Trevor Moore. And then a 1905, the backbreaker for sure. Nikita Zaitsev is third from Marner and Tavares in the third period, an empty netter. Marner, his 23rd, as Simmer referenced, a big night for John Tavares, gets the ovation. How about 1-2 in a 5-2 win here, Simmer, for the Maple Leafs?
Yep. Nick Batan, by the way, prolific with the Portland Winterhawks. He was a stud in juniors, and everybody talked about him coming out of the Western League, and, you know, it's taken a little while to get him going.
It has, and he got the call in this game. We'll see if that sticks long-term for the Maple Leafs, but when you can get your fourth line scoring, Mike Babcock certainly will take it. But no doubt, I think second straight game, the night belonged to this man, John Tavares.
Pretty special moment to certainly be recognized like that and get the support from the city and the fans. Shows you why it's special to be a Maple Leaf, and definitely got some goosebumps. Nice little boost there, so just nice to do it and win, and come home on a Saturday and play the way we did.
John Tavares is loving it. He was booed out of the building at the Coliseum on Thursday, cheered royally on Saturday. So they love him in Toronto.
Yep. Beautiful moment.
So the Leafs take it 5-2 in that one. We roll on here to Nationwide Arena. Excuse me. I almost forgot the name. The home of the Canet. Columbus and the Edmonton Oilers actually got started the 10-game card in the NHL.
No cannon today.
No cannon.
No cannon.
It's positive for everybody
involved. It was there, but we didn't hear it.
Actually, we heard Gene Principe signed a waiver before the game. He did not want to hear that cannon, but fortunately enough for him, it was all Oilers all the time and a matinee affair in Columbus.
Ryan Nugent-Hopkins will start this game along with Milan Lucic and Alex Chiasson against Artemi Panarin, Pierre-Luc Dubois, and Cam Atkinson. Atkinson leads this team in goals. He's got 35 on the year. Don't be sad it's over. Be glad it happens. And be glad that Zach Cassian puts it in the back of the net to open the scoring here in Columbus. Cassian gets double digits in goals now. He's got 10 on the year. And the Oilers have a 1-0 lead. Back up top, Draisaitl deflected to the side of the net. Josh Curry gets his second goal in the National Hockey League. The Oilers have a 2-0 lead. Draisaitl with Ratty, drop pass McDavid, back to him, scores. Leon Draisaitl, 40 goals on the season. And the Edmonton Oilers have a 3-0 lead. McDavid comes away with it. Shot by Chiasson, and the drought is over. Alex Chiasson, his 18th goal of the season, and relief on the face of number 39 as he had gone 21 games without lighting the lamp. Well, that drought is over, and he wins it into the corner, and Mikko Koskinen shuts out the Columbus Blue Jackets, his fourth shutout of the season, the fourth shutout of his career, as he stops all 30 shots sent his way by the Blue Jackets, and the Oilers skate away with a 4-0 win.
There you have it, Kevin Quinn, Drew Romenda doing the call on Sportsnet there. How about that? Edmonton rolls into Columbus, a 4-0 final. Connor McDavid, 3 assists. Leon Draisaitl, number 40 on the campaign. And Mikko Koskinen, again, one very rich individual, a 30-save shutout, his fourth career. First since December 9th, by the way, Simmer.
I want to talk about goal scorer Josh Curry. He's a great example to tell, pass along to your kids about stick-to-itiveness and determination. This is a guy that played in the ECHL for the Atlanta Gladiators. You remember them. You have all their jerseys.
Yeah, for sure.
The Bakersfield Condors and then the Norfolk Admirals. He goes up from the ECHL to the American Hockey League. 3.5 seasons, including this past half season with the Bakersfield Condors, now at the American Hockey League level, that franchise. And finally, at age 26, he gets into the lineup and tallies, just works his fanny off, gets a second career goal in this one tonight.
And I love the way things roll in Edmonton these days, that if you can do something offensively, you're going to get promoted to the top line. Like, it's just a given. Your name could be Ty Ratty, J.J. Kara. Yeah. Now it's Josh Curry on the top line, so...
I don't have a complete explanation for what's gone on.
They're looking for answers
over the last 12 years, but there's a lot of factors.
That'd be many Hockey Central Saturday shows. We don't have enough time. A 4-0 win for Edmonton. Here's Ken Hitchcock.
People bitch and complain about what we don't have. Well, what we got is a team. So to me, you got to give us that. Like, you can complain what we don't have. We got American League this or whatever, but what we got is a damn team.
He's not wrong on that front. That is Kenneth Hitchcock.
He didn't say damn good team either, because a lot of times you'll hear somebody say, we got a damn good team here. He just said, we got a damn team.
He had to hit his cuss words for the year. That's Ken Hitchcock, who I don't know what fired him up postgame.
Do you think he meant to say damned?
Yeah.
Or he said damn team. We have a damn team.
People mess that up a lot, too. Damn and damned.
I don't know, but they kind of mean different things.
I agree, and you're not wrong on that front, but a big 2 points, I suppose, for the Edmonton Oilers. 4-0 over Columbus. From there, we roll on to Jerome Ginlanite in Calgary, the Flames and Hayden Mathieson's favorite team, the Minnesota Wild. You just hate it when I bring up your Wild, but again, I can do it because I host a show. It's Minnesota and Calgary in this game. What do you think, first and foremost, of Jerome Ginla? Just the model of class act, is he not?
Yep, love everything about him as a player, as the class act, as you point out. He fought, power forward, scored, everything. And, later in his career, took a couple swings at it with Pittsburgh and Boston. Kind of hopped from, wasn't he with Pittsburgh when Boston eliminated him in 2013 in the conference final? It was kind of like a Marian Hossa pattern there for a while. Then he leaves that team. He goes to Boston, the team that had defeated him and knocked him out, because he's trying to get that cup.
Yeah.
So he's thinking, okay, maybe I'll get one in Boston. That was in 13-14. They last maybe two rounds. He goes bye-bye there, ends up in Colorado. So gave it his best shot trying to find that cup, never got it. But you know what? That's okay. Good on him. Unbelievable career, and as you just point out, class act. And again, I always go back to the Vinny LeCavalier fight in the final in 2004, Calgary against Tampa.
Just disappointing to me. Like, I would have loved to see Drone again, like, just play with Calgary to wrap up his career. And then he sort of, as you just mentioned, bounced around the NHL just a tad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, we get to the highlights of this game. Devan Dubnyk taking on Mike Smith, who had quite the night. Not for the better, I think, if you're a fan of the Calgary Flames. It's Eric Staal, fresh off the extension on deadline day. Scores his 19th, 1-0 Minnesota after 20 in the second. The response by Calgary. Back-to-back 30-goal campaigns now for Sean Monahan. Nothing boring about that from Goodrow. And Giordano was 1-1 after 40 in the third period, the beginning of what was not a great evening, I would say, for Mike Smith.
Cut off behind the net by Smith. Erickson Ek on him. Hannifin comes in to help out his goaltender. Smith caught up in traffic. Loose puck in front of the goal. He scores! Pinballs in. Mike Smith couldn't get out of the pack behind the net. And next thing you know, it's 2-1 Minnesota. Matt Reed. And now Spurgeon, who's been solid, finds Donato. Shoots! Scores! Ryan Donato, who's been hot since coming over from the Bruins in a trade at the deadline, makes it 4-2 Minnesota.
Rick Ball, Louis DeBrus, the call on CBC. That kind of night for the Calgary Flames, who see their 7-game win streak go up in smoke. And Minnesota, that's now 5 in a row after 3 third-period goals. Matt Reed is first off the mishap from Mike Smith, and Ryan Suter in the slot, his 7th. And Ryan Donato, I guess a puck that had eyes eludes Mike Smith. There was a video review that he deemed it a good goal. And Minnesota, Simmer, a 4-2 win over Calgary on the road.
Yeah, five-hole slap shot from the high slot. And the only reason they reviewed it is because there was a skate potentially offside way up out of the play. Fortunately, it didn't factor in. Just to tie back into what you said about Aginla earlier, though, I believe Jay Feaster was running the team at that point as GM. And you said it's too bad he didn't finish out his career there. Many people believe they held on too long.
Yeah.
Remember, it was him and Kiprusoff. It's like, oh my gosh,
move on.
Pull the trigger on the deal, would you? And they think they probably end up keeping him 2 years longer than they need to because they really needed to rebuild and start over. Although I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
It would have been lovely to have him stay, but it just wasn't in the cards.
As for Minnesota, Simmer, the Bujo guarantee is becoming a thing, is it not?
Love it. Love it. Like I was saying earlier, Jarmo Kekalainen, everybody's praising him for, hey, we want brave general managers to go for it, add to your roster. You have to keep these two UFAs, Bobrovsky and Panarin. Well, I like Gabby throwing it out there. I'm not sure Paul Fenton, the GM there, was too excited about him. He's not the guy that hired Gabby. But to throw out the guarantee and then to follow it up and have his team win five in a row, pretty cool stuff. They're in the second wild card position right now and only 4 points back of third place in the Central.
Nothing to lose. It's Nick Alberga, Rob Simpson with you in Hockey Central Saturday across the Sportsnet Radio Network. We move on to La Belle Provence, the Montreal Canadiens, the Pittsburgh Penguins in terms of the standings. Massive one. And the back-to-back for both teams, Montreal went into the Garden on Friday. Joel Armia, the hat-trick in that one. And Pittsburgh losing 4-3 to the Buffalo Sabres. So clearly Pittsburgh wanted to come out strong in this game. They went with Matt Murray in the back-to-back. Same goes for Montreal. They're number one in Carey Price. And well, Sidney Crosby had that type of night. It started early on, just 21 seconds in.
And gave it up. Here's a chance. Gensel back to Crosby. Scores! Sidney Crosby scores in the opening minutes. And we're off.
Yep, it was that type of night for the Montreal Canadiens and many opponents before and after when it comes to playing Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins. It just smashed him. Dave Randorf, the call there. Crosby is 29th from Gensel and McCann. Started the flood of goals. But 4 minutes later on the power play, Evgeny Malkin went to work.
Malkin with some room, wise, and shoots, scores! Evgeny Malkin fires one home. And how about this start for the Penguins?
Pretty impressive start, Dave Randorf. Evgeny Malkin's been man on fire since that suspension for whatever that was a couple weeks back. Scores his 21st, but then the route was on. A 5-1 win here for Pittsburgh. Jake Gensel, 2-2. Somebody tell him it's not a contract year anymore, Simmer. Lighten it up.
Yeah, they jumped out, no question, on top. And Gensel's been pretty good. 30 and 31 goals. I'm not sure. Oh, his assist total is 29. So mm-hmm. That means he's up to 60 points for Jake Gensel. Solid secondary scoring. One of the many reasons we like Pittsburgh to get into the postseason and to be a, you know, threat like they always are.
So disappointing. I do fantasy work for Sportsnet.ca, as you all know, and I jumped ship on Jake Gensel about mid-December because he just always disappoints me, and then he just goes off.
Yep, right after you get rid of him, right?
Saddening times for Nick Alberga in fantasy hockey, although I'm probably going to win a couple championships, to be honest.
You know what's wacky, though? You mentioned Armia's hat trick.
Yeah.
And we had Andrew Shaw's first career hat trick. And the game before that, we had Brendan Gallagher's first career hat trick.
Wow.
Is it three consecutive games or three of four?
Sadly, Pops has gone home, so we don't have our stats guy anymore.
It's definitely no worse than three in four games.
It's a good point,
because
though.
It was Detroit. Gallagher had the hattie. Next game, Shaw. It might be three straight.
Well,
Has that ever happened before in the history of the National Hockey League where three guys got their first career hat tricks in consecutive games for one team?
I told you the Pops Minnow Sports Bureau is done for.
I'll look it up during the break.
No, that's a really good point. Montreal's been notching hat tricks left and right. Not on this night. A resounding performance by Pittsburgh on the road. A gutsy call, I would say, in this analytics era to go back to your number one, but both teams did it. Matt Murray needed this one badly, didn't he? 36 saves.
Yeah, why not, though? Because didn't DeSmith come in at some point previously?
Mm-hmm.
Last game?
It's every game, it seems.
Yeah. So why not give him another start?
So, Pittsburgh, the big 2 points there. They roll up the standings again, still in the fight for their lives with the likes of Carolina, the aforementioned Montreal Canadiens, the Columbus Blue Jackets, who we talked about earlier. But good start there, a 5-1 win. They got Columbus, I believe, a couple times coming up this week. Final stop of this segment, the Tampa Bay Lightning against the Ottawa Senators. Your thoughts, in a nutshell, the Ottawa Senators, what's transpired there in the last 48 hours?
Well, I thought you were going to ask me about the last 2 years.
Last 18 years.
Our show is not long enough for determining what has gone on with the Ottawa
Senators. Mark Crawford, you play the best team in hockey.
Yeah. Yeah, welcome to the head coaching position. The timing, like everything else in Ottawa, referencing the last couple of years, awkward.
Bizarre.
Guy Boucher, time for him to go, maybe, but why?
Why now?
Yeah, like...
For a team who had just felt it was important for them just to ride out the schedule, no more negative PR storms, and 4 days after the deadline comes and goes where they deal another centerpiece, they do this. Yeah. Why?
And then Mark Crawford. You know, many people have penciled in other people, like Ralph Kruger, you know, coaches from the outside, who got, frankly, screwed when he was in Edmonton for a brief time during that...
Got fired on Skype.
On the carousel of coaches. He's going to have to try to make a... You know, he wants this position, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Like Mark Crawford? Like,
I don't know if anybody wants his job.
Is he going to have to make a statement for this at this point in the final month of the season? You'd think so. You think he'd try to get some level of motivation?
Have you seen this roster, Simmer?
I know. Well, that would prove my point. If he can get some wins, squeeze some wins out of this roster, even in garbage time, maybe he can make a run at it. It's better than coaching Team Latvia, which is what he was doing a couple years ago.
Good point. My only theory as to why they chose now to make this decision is a last-minute boost to try to get ahead of somebody else for Jack Hughes.
Potentially. Oh, I don't know if Guy Boucher is going to win you any hockey games over the last month, but
Mark Crawford might.
Mark Crawford might.
Boost the boys in the... I don't know.
Detroit,
I don't have a
Detroit
theory.
Has 50... You know, they're not... Detroit slid down to the second worst record in the league.
Yeah, LA's around there too. SoCal in general just doesn't win hockey games anymore. But the percentages are not in your favor anymore. You have like if you're the worst team in hockey, still at 18.5% chance, which means about 81.5% shot. You're not
going to get it. But
it's not great in my world.
Bottom line is they get smoked 5-1.
Yep. Here's a couple of the goals in this one.
Plays it off the boards to himself and still has the puck. So that's one lap. This time he drops it off for four. And they score. Ryan McDonough. He was down there. He took the shot. And the Tampa Bay Lightning have a 2-0 lead. Edmund fakes a shot. It's a little closer to the goal. Wound up in the corner. There's a long shot. They score. Anderson never saw it. Was just fired on net, and it looked like it was Kucherov. Tampa leads 4-1.
Well, as you probably could have suspected, when the best team in hockey plays the worst team in hockey, it's going to be a blowout. RJ Broadhead, excuse me, Jason York on City TV with the call. A 5-1 beatdown as expected for Tampa, number 50. 50, 12, and 4 on the season. The goal scorer is Victor Hedman, his ninth. Ryan McDonough, number 7. They got, in fact, four of their five goals, Simmer, came from defensemen. Eric Chernak, the rookie, scores one. Mikhail Sergachev, his fifth. And the heart winner, Nikita Kucherov, is 31st. Probably went according to plan, I would say. 5-1 Tampa in this one.
Everybody helps out with the Bolts. Everybody. So much depth. And they reach the 50-win mark in 66 games. It's only been done one other time. It was the 95-96 Scotty Bowman coached Detroit Red Wings. Who obviously went on to win the President's Trophy, and Scotty won the Jack Adams. I don't think you'll see that necessarily in John Cooper's case this year, which in any other year, if you're pulling this off, you're winning the Jack Adams. But given some of the work that's been going on with Trotz on the island and Brind'Amour in Carolina and Tocchet in Arizona, amazing to think that John Cooper... Boy, I hope at least he'd be a finalist.
Oh.
But he's got competition.
But it's disappointing to me because every year I think there's going to be that one team, right? Like, that's what makes the Jack Adams Trophy. But I'm with you. Like, I've been saying this for a while. John Cooper, like, if you're a best team in hockey for a long period of time, you're never going to get the awards you deserve, right?
Yep.
Like, year in and year out, Tampa's one of the top three teams, we'll say, in the NHL.
They discredit him for having great players.
For being too good.
So in other words, you're too good, and your players are too good, and, you know, it's not so much your coaching. And your goaltender stands on his head all.
Yeah. Taking nothing away, of course, from Barry Trotz, what he's done with the New York Islanders. But John Cooper, maybe make two awards. How about that?
Yeah. Kind of like the Norris and the non-Norris.
Yeah. Or the offensive Norris and the defensive Norris.
Have the double jack.
Yeah. We're on to something here, Simmer. We're going to hit the break. Other side, five more games to cover. The Carolina Hurricanes, well, they continue to roll. This time they were in Sunrise, take on the Florida Panthers. A crucial one in Enterprise Center in St. Louis. The Blues at home to the Dallas Stars. Marcus Johansson plays New Jersey for the first time as a member of the Boston Bruins in that one. Low scoring. Big night for Brad Marchand. The LA Kings trying to rid themselves of a 10-game skid at home to Chicago. Something had to give there. And Arizona flirting with a playoff spot? Say it ain't so. The Coyotes at home to Detroit. That's where we'll wrap up here. It's Nick Alberga, Rob Simpson on Hockey Central Saturday across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is Hockey Central Saturday on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And then there was one segment remaining here in this four-hour extravaganza we like to call Hockey Central Saturday across Sportsnet Radio Network. That's Rob Simpson. I'm Nick Alberga here
by the way, sorry to interrupt you, but I have
hey, no worries.
I've cleaned up my speculation. God, I can't believe I missed this too, considering I watch and log every single game that's played every single night. But it's still remarkable. The Montreal Canadiens' three Hatties, first career Hatties, happened over a five-game span. Man, where does the time go? it actually shot past. It was 5-1 against Philadelphia. That was the Gallagher hat trick.
Yep.
8-1 in Detroit. That was the Andrew Shaw hat trick. And then, of course, they lost to Pittsburgh today. But yesterday, that was the Joel Armia hat trick.
So we're going with Joel.
3-5. Three first-time hat tricks in five games. To me, that would still have to be a National Hockey League record.
Nonetheless, I think still incredible the fact that it was those three individuals, not the likes of Max Domi and Drouin and Kotkaniemi.
Yeah.
Depth guys. So yeah. Big pieces this time of year, no doubt. You can find us on Twitter at the Golden Muzzy at Simmer Puck. We roll on five more games to talk about the Florida Panthers. Man, oh man, they're on a roll. Not so much. But Carolina is in town in Sunrise. The Panthers playing five games this week. Did we get anything from the NHL why that is the case, by the way?
I do not know.
Like, that's a hellacious schedule. They were out west, too.
There's been some wacky schedules going on.
Yeah.
San Jose Sharks have a weird... Or no, it was... Who am I looking at? Oh, Carolina, actually, the team they just played, has a weird one, too, where they have just massive days off coming up for the next 2 weeks, and then they play every other day till the end of the season.
It's bizarre. They're going to need every point right now, and certainly in this one as well, and a good start for the Canes. How about a 2-0 lead, 2:05 in? Brock McGinn is eighth, Greg McKegg number five. But then the Panthers respond with Henrik Borgstrom is sixth and Mark Pesek. So it was a 2-2 game after 40. In fact, that was the score all the way until the third period, as mentioned, where Henrik Borgstrom will grab the lead for the Florida Panthers. Is seventh for McGinn and Dryden Hunt at 5:32. That said, it was short-lived about 3 minutes later, the tying goal for Carolina.
Henry taken back by Stahl. Here come the Canes. Stahl over the line, pulls up near wing, floats it out in front off a body. Pesci's there. He scores! Brett Pesci joins the fun, capitalizes. What a retrieval of the puck by 22, and the Canes have tied it.
As heard on Rogers NHL Live, it's John Forza on the call on Fox Sports Carolinas, and Brett Pesci is sixth from Jordan Stahl. The Canes still, by the way, undefeated since Jordan Stahl came back to the lineup. Set up OT, and who else would win it for the Canes?
Through center ice now, Niederreiter. 2-on-1 with Aho. Centering pass. They score! Hey, what do you say? Sebastian Aho wins it in overtime.
Gotta love that. The dad's trip successful for the Carolina Hurricanes. Sebastian Aho. I think this is a battle of two of the underrated players in the NHL. Sacha Barkov for the Panthers and Sebastian Aho, 27 on the year. From Nino Niederreiter and a big extra point, 4-3 the final for Carolina on the road here.
Only underrated because of the markets they play
in. Yes, correct.
Barkov's, you know, considered one of the best all-around hockey players in the National Hockey League, and Aho's set to cash a big paycheck.
Oh, yeah.
And the next contract coming up for him. But huge win for them to come back. Two little glimmers of hope for Florida, a team that's no longer in the playoff chase again. The fact that Henrik Borgstrom gets two goals and an assist, the first rounder in 2016, so he emerges a little bit. They also start Samuel Montembeau, who's the young netminder that they have to kind of have in place because Luongo's not getting any younger and Reimer's not getting any better. So it's either Montembeau and Bobrovsky or it's some other combination that we're going to be seeing from the Florida Panthers in the not-so-distant future.
So Carolina, speaking of Peter Mrazek, it's still unbelievable to me that this Carolina team is doing with Peter Mrazek and Curtis McElhaney. You want to talk about waiver pickups extraordinaire, what McElhaney, the veteran, has brought to the table. I know he didn't play in this game, but what a value signing as well. And Peter Mrazek gets the 2 points in this game. Sebastian Aho, 27th of the year, the game winner. That's 5 in a row and 9 of 11. To put you on the spot, does Carolina make the Stanley Cup playoffs, Simmer?
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy.
Well, hard-hitting questions here on the show.
I know it is tough though, because we say we like Pittsburgh getting in. They're in right now on the first wild card, tied 77 points with Montreal, and then Columbus at 75. So let's just say, because they're both Metro Division teams, is it going to be Carolina or is it going to be Columbus? I will say it's going to be Columbus.
Yeah. I think Montreal misses.
Well,
and I think all those teams get in.
That would put Carolina in. That'd be, I'm not going to say it'd be okay.
That'd be 5 Metro and 3 Atlantic.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Could see that happening.
Yeah, because Montreal's been losing a lot lately.
All right, well, in that case, let me just put it this way then. For the sake of Canes fans, I hope you're right. But Columbus will finish ahead of Carolina. So in other words, Columbus will be in the 3 spot, and if Carolina makes it ahead of Montreal, it'll be as a wild card team.
We'll hold you to that, Simmer. That's Rob Simpson. I'm Nick Alberga here on Hockey Central Saturday across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Our next stop, a crucial game in the Central Division, Enterprise Center at St. Louis and the Dallas Stars. And what a return to the lineup. After missing 2 games with an upper body injury, what a night for the captain of the Stars, Jamie Benn.
He wins it back for Fadoon. A shot, they score! May have been tipped by Benn, and the Stars take a 1-0 lead. Now Klingberg back in for Dallas. He'll drop it off for Benn. Thrown across. Now Benn wide open, a shot, he scores! Through the legs of Binnington, and Jamie Benn gets his 2nd. And John Klingberg throws it around. Good hold in by Dunn. Now broken up, and Benn for the hat trick, and he scores. And Jamie Benn with his 3rd, and it's 4-1.
Rather dejected, John Kelly on Fox Sports Midwest. Have yourself a night, Jamie Benn, when your team needs it the most. A 4-1 win in a very difficult building these days to win a hockey game in St. Louis. 4-1 Dallas takes it. 5th career hattie for Jamie Benn. John Klingberg, the other goal, his 8th of the season. Benn Bishop returns, makes 29 saves, and all's well, I guess, for this night, Jim Nill's squad.
Yeah, happy times getting the hat trick for Jamie Benn coming back into the lineup. A boost that they needed. They take advantage of a St. Louis team that lost on the road in Carolina yesterday. They come home and they lose again, 0-for-3 on the power play. Dallas 1-for-1, and that's a key stat to pay attention to, because the power play for Dallas has been a source of frustration for the aforementioned Jim Nill.
Among other things,
but on and off this season. Real slow start to it this season. Trying to find their way and trying to solidify a spot in the postseason. The Dallas Stars are the first wild card team with 71 points.
We're going to see a lot of flip-flopping, suffice to say, in the coming weeks leading into the Stanley Cup playoffs. No doubt about that. We roll on to TD Garden in Boston. It's the Bruins and the New Jersey Devils. A tightly contested matchup. Mackenzie Blackwood, the call, 29 saves. Tuukka Rask, the shutout. Just 1 goal scored in this game came, if you can believe this, less than 3 minutes in on the power play.
Marchand to Krug. Krejci's blast tipped in front by DeBrusk and a save. Here's Marchand, scores! The Bruins just buzzing around the goal, retrieving the puck, and Marchand doesn't miss.
Brad Marchand, the only goal, is 27th of the year on the power play from Bergeron and DeBrusk. Tuukka Rask, the easy shutout, 20 saves. Again, a very injury-riddled roster right now for New Jersey without the likes of Taylor Hall, Kyle Palmieri. So Jesper Bratt's playing on that top line with Drew Stafford and Nico Hischier. Bruins take care of business, not their best outing. Will they ever lose a game again is my question.
Well, it's a team we like to talk about and should talk about, yeah, because of the implications they may have with the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round of the postseason. And also, who knows, if there's an upset somewhere, maybe the Montreal Canadiens see them as well. But Boston, 16 games in a row now with a point. Tuukka Rask is on fire. We brought this up also early in the show about the importance of having a strong backup goaltender or a potential two-headed monster heading into the postseason because of the traffic in the crease. If you lose your goalie, who's your backup? Who's going to carry you to the Stanley Cup if you need him to? Well, they're in pretty good shape in Boston with Tuukka Rask and Yaroslav Halak. There's a couple other fine combinations like Leonard and Grice in New York on the island and Brooklyn / Nassau. So, you know, Toronto, I don't think, has that luxury. And Tuukka has been really proving himself as of late with this shutout victory. Now 3 points ahead of Toronto for home ice in that opening round of the playoffs. And just in case anybody is wondering, it is going to be Boston versus Toronto in the first round, kids. So buckle up. And again, home ice is huge. And 87 points for Boston, 84 points for Toronto. They both have played 65 times.
Not to mention they have the ace in the sleeve known as David Pastrnak, who's still out of the lineup, and it doesn't matter. They haven't lost in regulation since he left. And just a crazy stat to dug up by our statistician, Papa Minnow. Brad Marchand, 666 game with 666 penalty minutes, scores the lone goal in a game against the Devils. Like, you can't make that stuff up.
He is the devil.
Yeah, basically
six,
what I'm
six, six,
you.
Baby. Yep. He's a little rat.
Bit of everything. I don't know what that is. We'll move on. We roll on to L.A.
I thought that maybe was Brad Marchand butting in. Like
it was
saying,
the devil.
I'm not the devil.
The devil chiming in on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Our next stop, the L.A. Kings. Want this season end. There's no doubt about it. A 10-game skid at home to Chicago. A pair of two teams considered dynasty teams a couple years back. Here's the evidence of this one.
Away we go with the Kings and the Hawks at Staples Center. Special teams look pretty good against the Stars. Headman pass. Dustin Brown scores! Here's Kempe. Along the blue line, walks it in. Kempe behind the back. Walker, wrist shot, scores! Sean Walker doubles the Kings' lead. Roy and Phaneuf going back. And Strom centers. It's gathered and put to Perlini. He scores! Brandon Perlini, who was a scratch the last two games for Chicago, cranks it up and gets the Blackhawks on the board.
Whoa.
This could be trouble. Brandon Perlini catches the Kings on a change, and he scores! Second goal for Brandon Perlini, and Chicago is within one. Brodzinski over the line, and a two-on-one. A shot, they score! Adrian Kempe with the finish. Kings have the lead again. And the Blackhawks can't get the puck past the blue line. Toffoli shot off of the arm of Crawford. Brown spins it through the middle. Cut off by Keith. Turned over to Kopitar. Here's Brown. Shot. Score! There's your dagger! And they'll rise to their feet at Staples Center. The history books can wait another day. And the Kings are back in the win column.
Celebrate, throw that horn in succession. Alex Faust on Fox Sports West, and L.A. wins. It has to feel good, effectively, in my opinion, ending Chicago's hopes of the Stanley Cup playoffs. 6-3 the final. We had an Ilya Kovalchuk sighting in this game. Those are always fun to see, 1-1. Adrian Kempe scored his 10th. Brendan Leipzig his 6th. Dustin Brown had a couple goals, up to 16 on the year. And they can finally say they won a game for the first time in 11, Simmer.
That is some tough stuff. But yeah, who's the giggling color commentator?
Was
that actually, was that Jim Fox?
Or I loved it.
Somebody sitting, it might have been a celebrity in the booth.
They have a lot of those. Snoop Dogg earlier this year.
I think it was, it sounded to me like there was a woman celebrity.
Maybe it was Martha Stewart.
And she goes, oh no, like they're going to score again. Honestly, that's, we'll figure out who that was. But anyway, Chicago loses and you have taken them officially out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Nick Alberga is,
I'm the official.
X'd them off the board, which I agree with you. But the Kings with the victory 6-3. I don't know if you say miserable season they want to end. They get luxury travel with food on their flight and lots of leg room.
It's a good point. It's a good point. A life we'd both love to have, but unfortunately we do not.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll roll on to the final game of the night. You want to talk about luxury life? How about Antoine Vermette?
Oh,
had his own night.
He deserves his own night.
We've been roasting Vermette on the program.
He's a nice guy. I'm not kidding. I wasn't roasting him. I mean it when I say he's a nice guy.
Well, I've been roasting him because you don't deserve a night. I apologize, but you don't. Arizona home to Detroit. Got to take care of business if you're going to consider yourself a playoff team. And that's exactly what the Coyotes did in the third period. This one put this game out of reach.
And Estroza moves it across. Kalagoski to the front. Surely, and about 3 seconds later, Vinny gets it done.
How about that? It's Matty McConnell, Tyson Nash, the call on Fox Sports Arizona. Vinny Hinostroza, my cousin Vinny. Love it. His 11th from Chikrin and Panic. And Arizona takes care of business. Jimmy Howard, very solid in this game, 41 saves. But how did Darcy Kemper save the season for the Coyotes?
Darcy Kemper is, if not the most underrated goal goalkeeper this year in the National Hockey League. Most, one of the most overrated players total, anybody yeah. in the league at all. Like he is, like you just said, carried a team that's been injury plagued and has outstanding numbers. Every time you see a win for Arizona, you might as well just chalk it up next to Darcy Kuemper's name because he's been outstanding. And you keep mentioning Hayden, who's here producing
big
the show.
Wild guy.
Big Wild fan. Not too stoked about the fact that Darcy Kuemper headed down that way and has been so successful because he's been very, very good. It's another win for him. By the way, the Vinny Hinostroza goal that we just heard,
yes.
you do want to remember the controversy there, is they lit the lamp, they flipped the spotlight on, they buzzed the buzzer, the horn, the celebratory horn early, thinking the puck had gone and it hadn't. And the Red Wings were claiming deer in the headlight. They were stunned. Tyler Bertuzzi said, I couldn't see anymore. I lost my orientation, the sound and the lights. He made a chest save. He tried to make a glove save because his goaltender was out of position. Jimmy Howard had just made an outstanding save. And on the second and third rebound, Tyler Bertuzzi was upset that he was distracted by the lights and the sounds, and they eventually potted the goal. And I don't blame him for being upset. He smashed his stick over the crossbar, and I thought for a second he was going to use it on the ref. Thank God he didn't.
And that would not be good. Dennis Weidman says hi. We'll leave that.
It would not have been good.
We'll leave that be. No. A 3-1 final for Arizona sums it up. A 10-game card in the NHL, spearheaded, of course, by Jerome Iginla. Why not wrap up the program with a bit of his speech, Simmer?
Absolutely.
Here's Jerome Iginla on Saturday before his number 12 went to the rafters at Scotiabank Saddledome.
Thank you guys very, very much. This is such a huge, unique honor. It's not something you prepare for. Coming out here, this is so special. I really want to thank the Flames organization, ownership. It's not lost on my family or I what it means to have my name hanging up in the rafters with you guys. That was one of the coolest videos I've seen, and thank you, Lanny, for doing that. That was truly awesome, and it means a ton, and I've always been a huge fan and have so much respect. As a rookie, one of the first things I would do entering every new building, I'd go out to the benches, and I'd want to see the atmosphere and see the ice and see the seats of all the different buildings and compare it to how it looked on TV. And I'd always look up and I'd see the names and see the tradition and see if I knew them and see if I could even pronounce their names. I know you're thinking, hey, mine might be a handful for some people. But if I didn't, I would always ask one of our assistant coaches, the late Brad McCrimmond, Rico, Rich Preston, or the great hockey mind Al McNeil, and they would always, they seemed to know every single player, what position, what style of player, what they ate for lunch or dinner. They had a story about everybody, and it was awesome. And I really appreciated those times, and it's really cool to think that I'm, get to be part of the Flames tradition and be up there. It's very, very special. But looking up at those jerseys, with a player's fortunate enough to be recognized, everyone knows you don't succeed alone. I was blessed to play with amazing teammates and spend time around unbelievably dedicated hockey personnel, creating friendships that forever have left their imprint on me. Thank you, guys. But even long before that, all the way from youth hockey in St. Albert, I've had great teammates, parents, coaches, friends, and family that helped me every step of the way. I want to thank all of you. You've all been a huge, huge part of this. I want to thank my family, especially my mom, dad, Twyla, my wife, Kara, the kids, Jade, Tej, and Joe. It's been an amazing journey, and sharing it with you has truly been awesome and made it that much more special. Thank you. I want to also thank my former teammates, and I have a lot of family and friends in tonight, and it means a ton to see you here today, and you know, over this last couple days to share some memories and stuff. It's like hockey's a great sport. You know, you compete on the ice together, you do so many things together, and if you don't see each other for so long, you know, people go their own ways and stuff, but it's like we're just back there being kids again, and it's like we just saw each other. So thank you so much. It means so much to me to see you guys, and I know other family and friends here. Thank you guys. I have some very memorable moments that stand out. My first game in this building against Chicago, that was truly awesome as an 18-year-old kid, and getting to be on a, you know, center Theo Fleury and German Tithoff. It's something I will never ever forget, that first game. But I also got, you know, I got my first goal there. It was on there, pass from German Tithoff, right over there, low blocker on Eddie Belfour. It was awesome. And I also got my 500th in this building. And you guys, the one thing about the video, it kind of spoiled a little bit of what I was going to tell you about my 500th goal, and tell you I went end to end and went split the D like Mary Lemieux and went bar down, but I didn't. It was a moldy one. I tried to pass to Glennie over there, cross crease, off a stick, off a skate. It was an ugly one, but I loved them all the same. It was. But I do want to say, you know, with that, I was on the outdoor rink about a few weeks ago with my son, Joe, showing him some moves, some toe drags, some fakes, and all that stuff. And he says to me, Dad, I'm like, yeah. And he says, you didn't really use any of these nice moves. And I'll admit, I said, I'm like, come on, you're remembering me when I'm 39. Come on, a little bit back, you know. But they're pretty hard on me. Tease was a little nicer. He says when I showed him, he goes, well, Dad, you only scored shooting. Why are you showing me these moves? But no, it's awesome. It's truly a pleasure to be home and get to spend time trying to show them some stuff. And like I said, I want to get that video, Lanny. That was awesome when they give me a hard time. But taking this chance, it's very special. But in reflecting on so many memories, I realized I played with only three guys for 9 or 10 years here. And that's a lot of time spent together. Practices, games, buses, planes, road trips. And I really appreciate all my teammates, but I want to give a special thanks to these three. One was Rob McGeer. Reggie, he sure was a tough competitor. Always worked so hard on and off the ice, and he was a natural leader. His D side amongst the boys right over there was known as the Tunnel of Doom. And it was well earned. He'd catch a guy. He was obviously a big man, but for a big man, he had quick feet. And they would think they were getting by him, and just about the top of the circle to the hash marks, he'd get a hold of them. And he would ride them out right along the boards, right till about they would try to get away, but once he had them, there's no getting away. He'd ride them right to the goal line, crush them right into the boards, and just for good measure, you'd make sure you landed on them. And believe it or not, this was all legal back then, part of the rules. He was truly one of the hardest defensemen to play against from our era, without question. Thank you, Reg. Another was Mika Kiprusoff. We all know what an exciting goal he was to watch in the net. He took us from a rebuilding team to a playoff team, pretty much on arrival. He also helped us to lead us within one goal of the Stanley Cup. That was on the ice. But just as great as he was on the ice for us, he was just a great teammate. He was a big kid. He would always stir the pot behind the scenes. You know, he'd sit at the back of the plane or the bus chuckling as one of us walked into one of his jokes. And he never got blamed. He always got away with it. Well, we caught on eventually, but, you know, we had Peter Hanlon, our vice president and head of PR, fooled for many years. Peter didn't think he spoke English. And when he finally figured it out, he had Peter convinced that if he did interviews, he just couldn't perform. Got him out of a ton, and didn't work for me, though, eh, Pete? But he was awesome and a huge part of the success here. And lastly, Craig Conroy. He loved to tell the story about our first encounter. He didn't, me not liking him. When we first met, he says...
All right, that's pretty much it from Calgary. Jerome McGinley thanking everybody and their mother, and rightfully so. What a night in Calgary, although on the scoreboard it wasn't great for them. Simmer, fantastic job, my man.
Nick, always a pleasure. Big night of hockey. Very much enjoyed it.
There you have it, Rob Simpson. I'm Nick Alberga. Thanks so much for listening. Take care.